This is Health Matters, a podcast from Mayo Clinic where we discuss the latest medical advice, news, and research to help you live a happier and healthier life. My name is Kristen Meinzer. I'm a writer and journalist. And this episode, we're talking about acid reflux and gastroesophageal reflux disease, aka GERD. With the holidays in full swing and lots of big meals with family and friends on the horizon, tis the season of tummy issues with a little side of heartburn. For some of us, acid reflux might be an annual occurrence, but for others, might happen several times a week. Today, we're talking with Dr. Dawn Francis, a gastroenterologist at Mayo Clinic in Jacksonville, Florida. She'll explain why we experience acid reflux, what we can do to prevent it, and why the prevalence of GERD is on the rise. Dr. Francis, welcome to the show. We're so happy to have you here today.
Thanks for having me.
Now, our topic today, I feel like it's everywhere these days. Everybody seems to have GERD, and I'm putting myself in that category as well. I recently, in the last few months, got diagnosed with GERD and have been learning a lot more about it. So to start off, let's do a breakdown of some general terms. What is GERD? What is acid reflux? And what is heartburn?
So GERD is an acronym for gastroesophageal reflux disease. Mm-hmm. So having heartburn is one symptom that you could have if you have that diagnosis, or you can have heartburn every now and then and not have the diagnosis of GERD, not have the disease state, but rather the normal human condition state of every now and then having heartburn symptoms.
And those heartburn symptoms, typically that feels like burning in your chest, right?
The way that everyone experiences that is different.
Ah.
So heartburn in kind of the normal manifestation is the feeling of burning that can happen really anywhere from right behind your breastbone and radiate up. Some people feel it all the way up in their throat. Sometimes they feel it up in their sinuses. Sometimes people have atypical heartburn symptoms. So they might experience reflux really more as nausea. They don't have the burning.
Now, what is acid reflux?
So acid reflux is the physiologic action. So acid is coming from your stomach up. The symptom that you most commonly would have is heartburn. And if you have it frequently enough, or we have an objective test that determines it, then you would have gastroesophageal reflux disease.
So if someone is experiencing GERD, what other symptoms might they feel in addition to heartburn?
Sometimes people will feel heartburn symptoms that go beyond just coming up in the area right where your esophagus is. Sometimes other than just feeling it, you have full contents of the stomach coming all the way up. That's called regurgitation. So some people might experience that if they commonly have reflux, but they have a full stomach and they bend down to pick up laundry, let's say, and then all of a sudden things come up and out of their mouth even. Sometimes people will have gastroesophageal reflux disease and not have symptoms. Mm. So that would be called silent reflux. If reflux goes unabated and is severe, sometimes it can spill into the lungs, especially when someone's asleep, and that can cause chronic lung damage.
GERD rates have actually been increasing worldwide. You're a doctor with over 20 years in this field. Do you have any insights to explain why these numbers seem to be going up?
It's estimated that in the United States, about 20% of people experience reflux symptoms 3 times a week or more. So it is very common. There's a lot of reasons that we think it's increasing. And that has to do with all the things you've heard about that are problematic in our culture from a health perspective, increasing levels of obesity, smoking, alcohol use, poor lifestyles, poor sleep. So a huge portion of the U.S. population doesn't sleep well, and not sleeping well does play into reflux.
When we're talking about lifestyle, smoking, alcohol use, we're talking about choices that people are making. But there are also some cases where people don't have control over why they're experiencing reflux symptoms, right?
So I don't want it to come across that every person with reflux has done something to deserve the reflux. Many people mm-hmm. are innocent of their disease. For example, as much as 90% of women when they're pregnant, especially in the third trimester, have reflux. It's also more common as we age. Some people have congenital issues that predispose them or make them vulnerable to reflux. But with the question of why is it on the rise overall, it really has to do with an unhealthy lifestyle that we've adopted over the past century.
We've talked about what acid reflux and GERD can feel like. Now, let's dig into the mechanics of why. Acid reflux and GERD are things we experience as a result of what happens during digestion. So, doctor, when everything is in good working order, what happens when we are ingesting food? What is the process of the food going from our mouths to our stomachs?
So, when you eat a sandwich for lunch, you put it in your mouth and chew, and then you have a complicated system that pushes it from your mouth back into the esophagus. And then once it's passed down into the esophagus, your GI tract takes over. The esophagus squeezes the food that you ingested down into the stomach. At rest, the bottom of the esophagus has a valve, if you will, called the lower esophageal sphincter, and it's closed at rest.
Kind of like a faucet being closed when it's not in use.
Yeah, so the reason it's closed when you're resting is to keep the stomach contents from refluxing up into the esophagus and into the airway. So when you swallow, that squeezes the sandwich down. It also signals the bottom of the esophagus to open so that what you ingested can drop into the stomach. The stomach really doesn't digest your food. Really what it does is work as a holding tank for the food that you eat. And then it slowly pushes the food into the small intestine.
Just this part of the digestive process that we've covered so far. With so many moving parts, sometimes things go wrong. And that's where we get to the acid reflux.
Yeah.
Can you explain what's happening in that case?
So let's take food out of the equation. So digestion and reflux are sometimes related and sometimes they're not. Ooh. So just in the normal state, if you don't have anything in your stomach, it's, let's say, 5 hours after you've eaten. The stomach really, in its normal state, has acid in it. So the stomach creates a mucus barrier that lines it to protect it from the acid that's there. The esophagus and the small intestine don't have that same barrier. So when acid inappropriately leaves the stomach, it can cause pain and inflammation in both the esophagus and the small intestine.
But why do we even have acid in the stomach in the first place?
Now, the reason we think we've evolved to have acid in the stomach is because up until 100 years ago, our diets included many live organisms that were small and could cause problems with us. And the idea is that the acid in the stomach would not be favorable to different organisms that could infect us, parasites, bacteria, viruses. So it would be a first defense against things that we ingested that could harm us. Now we have virtually a sterile diet. We cook our food, we have refrigeration. So really, we're not exposed to foodborne illnesses as much as our ancestors were. Nowadays, there are conditions where people don't have any acid production at all. It doesn't really affect their digestion. And because we live in an environment where our food is generally very safe, they really don't have much in the way of consequences.
That's incredible. I had no idea that a person could survive without stomach acid. And those people, I'm guessing, don't get acid reflux because there's no acid.
Exactly. So the other important thing is the stomach makes its own acid milieu. It can make between 2 and 4 liters of liquid a day without you putting anything in there.
Everything you're telling me today is just blowing my mind. But let's get back to what's happening with acid reflux. So when it comes to that esophageal sphincter, that valve-like muscle that allows food to pass through, how are those stomach acids bypassing it?
Our understanding about this isn't completely robust, but pretty robust. So situations where you have pressure on your abdomen, like pregnancy or obesity, could increase the amount of acid coming up because just the mechanical pressing on the stomach and pushing things up. But also pregnancy has hormones that make your whole body relax and prepare to give birth. So that's why your cartilage expands and so forth. Similarly, the hormones associated with pregnancy also loosen that lower esophageal sphincter, and that can promote reflux as well.
So we have hormones that can loosen that esophageal sphincter or that faucet-like valve. Are there other things that can open it?
So there's some evidence that perhaps some content in cigarette smoke can do that. We have certain food substances. So high fat content food, just about everyone has had a situation where they eat a high volume fatty meal and their stomach expands because they're holding that big amount of food that they ate. But also the fatty content in it signals on a hormonal level for that lower esophageal sphincter to open. And those two things together promote reflux, which is why most people have experienced heartburn.
That makes it sound like, oh, whatever. Sometimes we all have things that are a little bit unpleasant with our digestion. So is maybe reflux not such a big deal then?
First of all, having some reflux is part of the human condition. So it's really unusual to make it through your whole life and have never experienced heartburn. In fact, when we do studies on gastroesophageal reflux disease, the best studies will include a group of normal people who don't have reflux as a diagnosis. Mm-hmm. But oftentimes as part of our studies, we will try to induce reflux with them. So we'll give them a high fatty meal, high volume. We lay them down and put them on the right side, and just about everybody will reflux. So it is part of the human condition. It becomes a disease when it becomes more troublesome than every now and then and associated with what you eat. So there are objective measures to determine whether someone has reflux, but really in terms of when is it time to start thinking you might have this as a condition, the typical guideline is that 3 or more times a week you have reflux. Now, depending on your diet, you might be doing that on your own. But that's the marker where we start thinking about it as a diagnosis, something that might need to be treated on a daily basis.
When children have anxiety disorders or OCD, they may feel anxious or upset, even when there's nothing happening around them that would frighten or bother most other kids. And as parents, we're all just looking to help our kids through whatever they're experiencing. If you're a parent to a kiddo with anxiety or OCD, pick up a copy of Anxiety Coach, published by Mayo Clinic Press. In it, clinical psychologist Dr. Stephen Whiteside shares practical skills, tools, and guidelines to help parents carry out exposure therapy with their child at home. Start your family's journey toward anxiety-free living today. Get your copy of Anxiety Coach at mcpress.mayoclinic.org and use code KIDS for 10% off your order today.
There are a lot of reasons why GERD is on the rise, and many of them are lifestyle related, given our increasing levels of obesity, smoking, and alcohol use. Acid reflux takes place when the lower esophageal sphincter at the bottom of the esophagus loosens, letting acids from the stomach come up. Even healthy people experience reflux from time to time, though some people may experience it for reasons that are out of their control. They might have conditions or congenital issues that predispose them or make them vulnerable to reflux, like pregnancy. Now, what about complications with acid reflux? And how do we diagnose and treat GERD? Something you mentioned that increases our risk of reflux is our age. Why is that? How does that work?
So let me talk about another thing that's common that makes people vulnerable to reflux, and age fits into that category. So I'm going to try my best with words to paint a picture of what this is like. So in your body, your esophagus courses from the back of your mouth down through your chest, and then it meets the stomach in the abdomen. The muscle that separates your chest from your abdomen is the diaphragm, the muscle that's responsible for breathing. The diaphragm has to have a number of different holes or openings in it that you're born with to allow the things from the chest to course through and meet the contents in the abdomen. So there's an opening in the diaphragm that allows the esophagus to course through and meet the stomach down in the abdomen. The stomach, correctly positioned, is right under the diaphragm. When that opening is bigger than it should be, it allows some of the stomach to slip up into the chest. So that bolstering of the diaphragm is important, because when that area, that muscle, the diaphragm, is wider than it ought to be, a defect, then we get a hiatal hernia where the stomach slips up into the chest. So as we age and our muscles thin, it's more common to have a hiatal hernia, and it's more common to have a bigger one.
And can someone be predisposed to hiatal hernias?
Now, people can be born with hiatal hernias, and we know that if your parents had a hiatal hernia, that it's more common that you'll have one. But as you collect years, it's also more likely that you'll collect a hiatal hernia, and that predisposes you to reflux. Similarly, hiatal hernias can come about with increased abdominal pressure. So pregnancy itself can cause a hiatal hernia. I'm aware of patients who will have blunt abdominal trauma, for example, in a car accident and the airbag deploys, that pressure on the abdomen can push the stomach up and cause a hiatal hernia.
Now, I want to ask about when we bring our care providers into the fold. If folks are experiencing reflux symptoms 3 times a week or more, this could be GERD. Is that the point when I should be going to my doctor?
Generally, if you're having symptoms that frequently, you should at least start with your primary care doctor to go over the symptoms and what needs to happen next. It doesn't necessarily have to be a gastroenterologist. Primary care doctors and their staff are very used to seeing it. Remember, it's very common, but you should seek medical care.
We don't want to scare anybody here listening, but can we talk about what acid reflux can lead to if untreated?
Untreated acid reflux, the most common thing it would cause is stricturing or scar tissue in the bottom of the esophagus. That can lead to difficulty swallowing, dysphagia. Sometimes we see patients who have ulcers that span the length of their esophagus from bad reflux. So that's one of the most common things. Now, there are two conditions that are talked a lot about: Barrett's esophagus, which is a precancerous lesion of the esophagus, and then esophageal cancer. But I want to put that into context so it's the right amount of alarming. So what we know is that people who have reflux are more common to have a precancerous condition called Barrett's esophagus. We know it's more common with people that have reflux, but people without reflux can get Barrett's esophagus as well. We do know that Barrett's esophagus can transform into a specific type of esophageal cancer, but the likelihood or commonality of going from Barrett's esophagus to going to esophageal cancer is very uncommon, lifetime risk of about 1 in 1,000. So while we want to have you in the fold of medical treatment and evaluation, it's not something to have heavy on your shoulders day after day. But it is a reason why, if you're over the age of 50 and you have new heartburn symptoms, one of the reasons we want to look is we don't want to miss an esophageal cancer that's presenting as a heartburn type symptom. So it is why we ask people to have a medical evaluation and not self-treat over time because of the potential complications.
Let's talk about diagnosis and treatment. So we have our patient, they've been having reflux symptoms for a while now, and it's been 3 times a week or more. What is the next step that their doctor might take?
It really is an individualized approach. But generally, we will first want to make sure that you don't have any complications for reflux. This is especially true if you're over the age of 50. Also, if you're over the age of 50 and you've had more than 10 years of reflux, it's a reason for us to do a screening procedure with the upper endoscopy to look for Barrett's or other complications.
For people who don't know what an endoscopy is, can you explain that?
So an endoscopy is when we take a camera and we look inside your body. For reference here, what we're talking about is something called an EGD, which stands for esophagogastroduodenoscopy, which is why we abbreviate it as EGD. What that is it's a fiber optic camera. Usually in the United States, we have people sedated for that. In many countries in the world, you're not sedated for it. The way it works is we take this fiber optic camera, it goes in through the mouth, down into the esophagus, stomach, and first part of the small intestine. We have a working channel in that scope that we use so we can photograph things, but we can also actively do things. So I can take biopsy samples, I can take samples of the fluid in the small intestine and send it for bacterial culture. There's sometimes where we do something therapeutic. So if you had, for example, a scar tissue type stricture called a peptic stricture and keeping you from being able to swallow, we have devices where we can stretch that out.
It's amazing what technology can do nowadays. So is this how you make a diagnosis?
Now, looking for complications is not the same as making the diagnosis. So the diagnosis is typically clinical in nature, meaning that you have typical symptoms that are typically associated with reflux. You have it more than 3 times a week, and then we'll give you a medication treatment often and see whether you respond. Those things together are what make the diagnosis. You don't have to objectively prove, meaning you don't have to have some specific test to prove whether you have reflux or not for us to start a treatment strategy for you.
So when you're doing testing, you're doing it because?
Is often to make sure you don't have other things that are associated with reflux, the complications that I mentioned. Sometimes we'll do an esophagus x-ray to determine whether you have a hiatal hernia because that may prompt a different treatment intervention. So just depending on age and what your symptoms are, we may do testing really to evaluate for complications for reflux or a different way of managing it other than just medication. There are patients, however, that do need to have objective testing. So the objective testing is tests where we measure directly the amount of acid or stomach contents that are coming into the esophagus. So the test your doctor decides to do depends on really kind of what they're trying to answer. The conditions where we do a test to confirm or refute the diagnosis of reflux objectively are often when a patient is in a situation where we think they might need a surgery for reflux. In that situation, the stakes are higher and we really need to prove that they have reflux disease. Other symptoms might be they don't have symptoms at all, but have a pulmonary complication, or I sometimes see patients who have cavities in a certain pattern and their dentist says to them, you look like you have reflux and they don't have symptoms, and then we'll test them so we know whether we're treating them appropriately or not. So there are a variety of different conditions where we really need to prove it, but generally the disease itself is diagnosed clinically, meaning just by symptoms.
And what kinds of medications do you give for those symptoms?
Again, very individualized. So the categories are antacids, so things that neutralize acid, alkaline pH water, aloe vera juice, things like that would neutralize acid. I'm sure you're aware of antacids that you purchase over the counter. So Tom's, Rolaids, Gaviscon all fall into that kind of antacid category. We usually use those as treatment for people who don't have very frequent symptoms or their symptoms aren't very severe. For example, the person that eats pizza late at night and they have heartburn and they can just pop a couple of antacids and that's fine. Sometimes we'll use antacids in addition to other medicines. So antacids is the mildest of the group. And then we go to another class called H2 receptor antagonists. Those were the first robust medications to suppress acid production in the stomach. And the most common one that you would think of is Pepcid or formerly Zantac. That's in that category. Those have been over the counter for years and years. And then the most potent of the different medications is a class called proton pump inhibitors. So the way proton pump inhibitors work is by stopping the stomach from manufacturing acid. They've been in production for the past 50 years, probably the most widely prescribed medications in the course of human history. And the lower doses are available over the counter for most of the proton pump inhibitors. They don't neutralize acid at the moment. that's why they take some time to work. So you can pop the Tums and get immediate relief because of the acid neutralization. But if you take a Prilosec, it's going to take several hours at least to work because of the acid production component. In fact, in the most severe situations when people are on a medicine like a proton pump inhibitor, we've usually decided that they need it because of the severity and frequency of their symptoms. And for those people, it usually takes as long as 4 to 6 weeks for the medicines to be fully effective because of the way they work in the body is to decrease acid production. It takes time to do that, but it also takes time for any injury to heal.
So let's say a patient is taking a proton pump inhibitor, but the reflux hasn't gone away. Mm-hmm. What would you do in that case?
So there's lots of maneuvering we can do with the medicines I mentioned. I suppose your question is, you've tried everything you can do from a medication perspective. Is there anything else available?
Exactly.
So there is anti-reflux surgery. It's called a Nissen fundoplication. So that's the most common. And I'm not a surgeon, as a disclaimer. But these are typically laparoscopic surgeries. The way the surgery works is they take the top of the stomach and make a barrier, like they make a little bit of a roll type thing, and they roll it all the way around, kind of like a donut, on the bottom of the esophagus to serve as a barrier to, again, bolster that lower esophageal sphincter. So that's the surgery that's available, the most common and tried and true surgical intervention.
When you make an appointment with your provider to check on your acid reflux, your doctor may check for complications from reflux. It's especially important if you're over the age of 50, even more so if you've been experiencing reflux regularly over the past 10 years. Some people, because of advancing age or genetic predisposition, might experience complications with acid reflux, like hiatal hernias. Now, looking for complications is not the same thing as making a diagnosis. Generally, GERD is diagnosed just by observing that the patient has symptoms that are typically associated with reflux. That said, there are objective testing methods as well. If you need medication, there are three classes to choose from. The mildest are antacids, which neutralize the acid in your stomach. There are also H2 receptor antagonists, like Pepcid, which suppress acid production in the stomach. Then there are proton pump inhibitors, which stop the stomach from manufacturing acid and generally take a longer time to take effect. And in the more severe situations where medication doesn't work, there are anti-reflux surgeries as well. Now, how to determine whether it's just normal reflux or something more problematic? Well, when you're experiencing acid reflux at least 3 times a week, it's time to check in with your doctor. And while rare, it is possible there can be complications that arise from leaving your acid reflux untreated, from Barrett's esophagus to possibly even esophageal cancer. So be sure to check as soon as you notice any issues. Now, doctor, let's talk about prevention and how we can avoid acid reflux in the future. Earlier, you said that a lot of what we're seeing with acid reflux may be due to diet, particularly high fat content foods. What should we specifically avoid eating that might trigger acid reflux?
It's simple, but it's hard. But it turns out that the things that cause reflux are the things we like the most. So high fat content foods, fried or fatty foods. Most people know that when they eat these things, generally people have had experience enough to think about, yeah, like that doesn't sit well with me. High acidic foods. So things like marinara sauce, tomatoes, citrus, they add to the acid that's already in your stomach. One that everyone knows causes problems, but they don't think about it specifically, is onions and garlic. Alcohol, I mentioned already. Carbonation. So carbonation causes reflux because what makes things carbonated is a gas that then sits in your stomach. You can't absorb it. And so you have to vent it out. And the venting is belching. And belching is a pure form of reflux, something coming from your stomach and then coming out. So it usually has stomach contents that come along with it. Now, you might not have thought about it, but chocolate contains caffeine and fat. So chocolate is a common offender. So that's what I meant by it's simple, but it's hard. Avoiding those things is hard because there's so much of what our daily life is, especially the caffeine component. Coffee is very acidic. It's a common condition where people drink several cups of coffee in the morning and then have heartburn as a result. Mm-hmm. So this type of caffeine that's a little safer is tea-based. Tea usually has a little bit less caffeine and it's less acidic than coffee. You know, no one wants to say don't have any caffeine. There's evidence that caffeine is helpful for humans, but usually the modes of delivery of caffeine have other stuff in there in addition to the caffeine that can make people really have heartburn. Diet Coke, for example, has caffeine in it and it has carbonation, is also acidic. So you get like a trifecta of problems with that.
You've begun to already give us some tips about food we can avoid to decrease our likelihood of reflux. What can we do when it comes to lifestyle changes?
There's a few things that are lifestyle related. So weight loss is often a very helpful strategy to decrease the amount of reflux that someone is having. I did touch a little bit in the beginning about sleep. First of all, remember the stomach is a storage tank. And so the closer that you eat to the time you go to bed, the more that's in the storage tank. And then you're lying down. So now you're in a different mechanical configuration that will promote reflux. So one of the main lifestyle modifications is to eat the biggest meal of the day at lunch, and then to have a smaller or lighter dinner, and to not eat a meal less than 4 hours before you go to bed. That change is very helpful and also often a cornerstone of treatment for people. But again, it's a human condition. Everyone has had a situation where they have a large meal and they lay down and it causes heartburn. Some people with reflux who also have regurgitation will elevate the head of their bed. There's different ways to do that, but typically the elevation is about 30 degrees to get to the point that you have some improvement with the reflux. Again, just a mechanical intervention to try to keep stomach contents from coming up. Another thing is that good sleep is important for all of our human functioning, and reflux is no exception. So part of the lifestyle that you could adopt is making sure that you get 7 to 8 hours of sleep at night.
What about natural remedies? Things like apple cider vinegar are often talked about with GERD, or licorice or ginger. Are these just things we like to believe, or do they actually have an effect on acid reflux?
As a doctor of Western medicine, we have an undercurrent of philosophy, which is that we have to show things that are helpful in order to ascribe to them or believe in them. With that being said, many supplements have not been rigorously tested. And so as a result, we don't have a lot of information about those. And generally, I just don't want people to be harmed by what they're doing. I'll tell you the things that do have some evidence. They've been tested either in this country or others that are alternative in nature. So one thing is acupuncture. Acupuncture has been tested widely in China in pretty rigorous scientific studies, and does show some benefit for not just heartburn symptoms, but actually the amount of reflux that you're having. So there is some scientific study and exploration to support that. Another thing is melatonin. So there's a study that looks at melatonin on its own, melatonin plus a common medication called omeprazole or Prilosec, and then the two together. And the two together seem to have a synergistic effect, not just with symptoms, but with actual measurement of the amount of acid. Another thing people don't think about, but we do recommend to people to consider drinking alkaline water when they're drinking water. So that's the idea of neutralizing the acid that's in the stomach. I remember my dad, when I was little, used to mix baking soda and water, which is bicarbonate, which is essentially alkaline water. Now you don't have to mix it, but they sell it. There's a couple of brands out there in the water aisle. They market themselves as having a high pH.
Oh.
There's also some evidence that aloe vera juice can be very soothing. Again, not harmful.
Now, with all these options, the lifestyle changes, the medications, the surgeries, is it possible for GERD to ever be considered cured?
it's definitely possible for it to be much less troublesome. So with the surgery and also with the medications, we can get patients to the point that they're really not having acid reflux. Now, I think embedded in your question might have been, is it possible for a patient who's needed treatment to then go on to not need treatment?
Correct.
That's often what we think about with GERD. Generally, GERD is a chronic disease, but there are certainly patients with lifestyle modifications, especially the weight loss piece of it, where they can go from symptoms to no symptoms. It's often true. I'll sometimes see patients who have not had symptoms their whole life. They come in, let's say they're 45, they have a new symptom, and we can get the symptom under control. My practice is to typically try to lower the dose or to get them off because they weren't on it before. You know, can we get them to a point that they're not on it? So it is possible for sure, but it often does require some significant lifestyle changes to get there.
Dr. Dawn Francis, this has been so illuminating. Thank you so much for joining us today.
You're very welcome. It was my pleasure.
We get to choose what we eat and, as a result, up to a point, how often we experience acid reflux and GERD. A lot of that means limiting our intake of high fat content foods, fried foods, caffeine, and highly acidic foods. Other foods like onions and garlic also affect our lower esophageal sphincter, carbonation causes reflux, and chocolate unfortunately contains both caffeine and fat. That said, acid reflux might be something you're willing to deal with because who can say no to chocolate? In addition to avoiding certain foods, there are other changes we can make. Saving your biggest meal of the day for lunchtime, avoiding eating 4 hours before bed, and sleeping with your head elevated are just some ways to avoid acid reflux. Acupuncture, melatonin, and alkaline water can also be helpful for either treating or lowering incidences of acid reflux too. And while GERD is a chronic disease, it is possible for some patients with significant lifestyle changes to go from experiencing symptoms to eventually none at all. Okay, that's all for this episode. But if you've got a question or topic suggestion, you can leave us a voicemail at 507-538-6272. We might even feature your voice on the show. For more Health Matters episodes and resources, head to mayoclinic.org/healthmatters. And if you found this show helpful, please subscribe and make sure to rate and review us in your podcast app. It really does help others find the show. Thanks for listening. And until next time, take care and stay healthy. This podcast is for informational purposes only and should not be relied upon as medical or legal advice. Always consult with a qualified healthcare provider for any medical questions. The appearance of any guest does not imply an endorsement of them, their employer, or any entity they represent. The views and opinions are those of the speakers and do not necessarily reflect the views of Mayo Clinic. Reference to any product, service, or entity does not constitute an endorsement of or recommendation by Mayo Clinic.